Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's November 24th, 2015. Happy Thanksgiving. We've got a special episode. We're going to be talking about Belgian sour beers and pork pate. I found this episode recorded at March 26th in the East Village. It was the day of the East Village gas explosion, and I feared that the episode had been lost, and we're sitting here in the studio. We just pulled it up. It features Rudy, the master blender from Rodenbach, and Sam Barbieri, who's a great chef, talking about Belgian sours, Rodenbach beer, and pairing with pork pate. So have a great Thanksgiving, and this is our Thanksgiving show. Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. This is a special episode being recorded in March 2015 with the brewer Rudy from Rodenbach and some of his team, along with Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House. So here we are in New York City at Jimmy's Number 43. Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have questions, you can follow our tweets at beer_sessions. This show will air in April 2015. So we got some special guests here. David from Lattice Imports. You guys import Rodenbach, one of the great sour beers of Belgium. Give us a little background on the beer and what you guys are doing with Rudy in America this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the intro and thanks for having us. Cheers. We import Rodenbach, which, as you know, is one of the great classics, world classics, as Michael Jackson described it. Sour beers are really having a resurgence. It's a traditional style of beer. Aging beer in oak barrels was historically a way of acidifying beer and preserving beer, and it creates a wonderful taste spectrum. And we've been bringing Rodenbach in. The Rodenbach Brewery has more oak aging capacity than all of the U.S. combined, because in its home geography, the beer we've got in front of us is Rodenbach Session. Some people call it classic or original, is a session beer. And in its home geography, this is what people drink every day as their thirst-quenching beer. It's 5.2% alcohol. It's a one-quarter 2-year-old beer, so beer that's aged for in oak barrels for 2 years, and three quarters mature beer. So Rudy, maybe you can describe a little the process of the old beer versus young beer.
The process is a very original and old preserving. Preservation method of beer, because at the beginning of beer making, the shelf life of the beer was very short, and to give it a longer shelf life, they store a part on wooden vats, so they make a kind of acid beer, and then they blended the acid beer back with the young beer to reduce the pH in the blend, and reducing the pH in the blend was just under the point that bad beer bacteria could not damage the beer. And that was a double effect, because it was more refreshing, and because it was slightly sour, and it protects the beer and preserves the beer. That's the origin.
That's great. And how far back does this style of beer go?
I think you have to go back to the Middle Ages. It's the start of beer making, in the history. People always used herbs and spices to flavor their food and also their beers. And afterwards, they have discovered that there was a herb that preserved the beer better, and that was hop. So, in my opinion, hops was coming after sour beers. Bitter beers have the disadvantage that they are not well accepted when people are young. Young children don't like it, because bitterness in nature is poisoned. And also women don't accept it very well. So that was a disadvantage of hop, but the advantage was that it preserved the beer also very good.
And Bart's here, you're the export.
I'm the export director for Palm and Rodenbach. So Rudy makes the beers, and I try to sell them worldwide. So currently we sell into some 30 countries, and the US is our biggest export market. And we are very fortunate that now the sour wave is building here, and that we have the original sour, if you want, in our portfolio. So we are for the next couple of years focusing very much on Rodenbach as a portfolio to build.
What do you guys think has changed? You know, now it seems like a lot of people want sour beer. We saw a lot of sour beer. What's changed in America?
Well, I think you look at, you know, you have a restaurant and look at what people are eating, not only what they're willing to eat, but what they can appreciate. And I think, you know, I sometimes equate beer to coffee and look at the coffee revolution that's gone on. And at first people will drink, you know, something like a Starbucks because it's like pow and wow and it's way over here. And as they, you know, appreciate and understand the different nuances of coffee, they've come back to settle on less big pow taste and something more refined. And I think with sours, as you see people, there's one theory that, you know, craft beer drinkers will evolve out of beer quicker than others because they will pay more for something, they'll drink something with greater taste, with greater alcohol. And if you think about that spectrum, that gets you into wine and spirits quicker. However, sour beers are very much on that spectrum, either to keep people in or to attract people back. So I think what's happened is the whole American palate has grown and can really appreciate a sour and the taste aspects of a sour.
You know, we're here with Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House. Sam, you're one of the bar owners I know who's appreciated Rodenbach for a long time. Tell us about when you first started drinking it.
I was always a fan of a sour. I'm not a sweets person. So I appreciate the sours, and I like to pair them. The way that I got into beers and was educated with beers because I became friendly with a large group of home brewers very early on.
Yeah.
Garrett Oliver being one of them, a couple other people that were brewers, had a lot of knowledge of brewing, knew how to taste as components. So we would break down beers and try to taste the components in the beer to become a little bit more educated and how to educate the customer as well. So what we do with our menu is we try to pair beers with the dish that we're making. Mm-hmm. And we tell the customer the same thing. Listen, I got a beautiful goat cheese and walnut salad that's going to go great with this little sour beer. Try and taste the goat cheese and then taste the sourness. But you're not only getting sourness, you're getting that fruitiness as well. And that's not only coming from cherries that are in, that's coming from that beautiful strain of yeast that's been cultivated for 3 centuries. I think the education is the most important thing. I think that the younger people, and I have 2 daughters in their 20s that are very astute to different flavors, and their friends know that they don't just go buy a pizza. They have to have such, you know, a certain pizza with certain cheeses, and they pair beers with cheeses and meats. And they appreciate cooking so much more. It's just not, it's not buying, you know, a piece of American cheese off the shelf anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Younger people, and it's the greatest thing now that younger people, 20s, 30s or so, not even younger than that, I should say, because I know a lot of families that are cooking much more healthy, letting their children try a little glass of wine and beer with their meal, as has been in Europe for many years, but the children know the flavors and how to pair them and how to appreciate something better. They're not going to go out and binge drink. They could appreciate a good beer with good food.
I think something that we see is, interestingly, women in particular appreciate Rodenbach and red wine drinkers. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of that has to do with it being sort of outside of the you know, current or traditional definition of beer. And Rudy, maybe you can tell a little bit about how the pH level and the acidity of the beer goes well with both your digestion as well as certain foods like cheese.
The classical Rodenbach has the typical pH of 3.5, which is the same pH as you have in a good Chardonnay wine. And why the pH of 3.5? That is because under 3.5, bad beer bacteria will not develop them in the beer. So you will not have spoilage that preserves the beer. And it makes the beer more digestive. So sour products goes better together with food, because it breaks down the fattiness and also the proteins that you have in the product. And therefore you can compare Rodenbach the best with a white wine, but it looks like a red wine. And in the view, you had to think at the Pinot Noir, and when you drink it, you had to think at the Chardonnay.
So David, tell us, the first beer we're drinking is this.
Yes, the Rodenbach Classic. Rodenbach Session is a 5.2% alcohol beer, so it's very refreshing in its home geography. You'll see, you know, people drinking it in cans at, you know, outdoor events and rock concerts and things like that.
Really, Rodenbach cans?
There are Rodenbach cans.
That
they're
sounds
not,
like fun.
They're not currently in the U.S., but that tells you how people in their home geography, and again, the reason this brewery has more oak aging capacity than all of the U.S. brewers combined is because in its home geography, this was the go-to everyday beer. So it's very much a refreshing beer, as Rudy talked about. The level of the pH makes it very thirst-quenching, it very palate-cleansing. It's light-bodied in nature, even though it's got a nice dark color to it. It's very light-bodied, so it's an easy-drinking beer.
Well, I'll say, in terms of other sour beers that are popular and kind of intro sour beers, a lot of people are making the Berliner Weiss, mm-hmm. which sometimes I find too sour, or too. It seems like it's a cheap version.
Yeah. The difference is between Berliner Weisse and the red-brown ale that we make is that in Berliner Weisse you have fermentation of lactic acid and you don't smell it. So it's shocking when you are drinking it because it's very sour and you are not aware. There's no awareness when you smell the beer. So when you try this one and you smell it, you smell a certain sourness, and this is in combining with the taste. So the product is much more in balance.
And what were you, Sam was about to say something.
Yeah, no, I said Berliner Weiss. If you don't put some fruit syrup in a Berliner Weiss, it's very difficult to get people introduced into it.
I find a lot of American.
This has character breweries, in the background.
Some of the new breweries are knocking out a Berliner Weiss. When they're new, I feel like it's kind of an easy beer to make. It's a fast mm-hmm. beer to make.
Well, yeah, you've raised an interesting topic. It's, you know, the people say sours, and it goes from Berliner Weiss to Saisons to a Flemish Red Brown Ale to a Lambic to whatever somebody threw in a barrel for a bit. So it's such a broad description. And something I've learned, and Rudy, you can talk about this, is how this beer has two fermentations. It starts as an ale fermentation, and the majority of the fermentation happens there, and then it's aged or matured in oak barrels. And the fermentation that happens there is mixed, but it's very subtle. It's more for flavoring than actually alcohol. And explain how that differs, because that, you know, American sours are quite different because of that.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, I think I have to start to tell you what is spontaneous fermentation, because this is the origin of beer making. Spontaneous fermentation will say that you don't use a yeast culture. You work with the yeast who are in the air. And then lambic brewers make a wort. They pump it on the cool ship and it stays there for a night. It will be infected by microorganisms from the air. And then they pump the beer on wooden vats, laying vats. And on the laying vats you have fermentation and also a maturation. To make a good spontaneous fermented beer, you have to do it in wintertime without using yeast or wild yeast. And in history, that was not possible because the people drank the whole year round beer. And therefore, they recovered the yeast culture from the lambic that they made in wintertime, and they made a kind of summer beer with a mixed yeast culture. But that type of beer was, the shelf life of that type of beer was very short. And that's the reason why they came to mature it on wood. Advantage of mixed fermentation is that you do less, as David said, you do at the first time, fermentation with yeast cells, with a yeast culture on a tank or on a, and then you go with the beer on wood for maturation. So that's a big difference, and that's also the reason why you don't have so much off flavors in a mixed fermented beer. You don't have the typical wild yeast flavors in our product. Most of the of beers who are fermented with wild yeast are blended, or people added fruit and wild fruit to compensate the off flavors who are made by the yeast cells and also the autolysis of the yeast during the fermentation and maturation on the same vat. We don't do that. We go with an ale on wood with as less yeast cells as possible.
So Rudy, we like your accent and the beer, so I'll let you keep talking because the accent always makes everything sound better. And David, how do you guys sell Rodenbach? I mean, your export, you're selling it to what, distributors? And
we sell to importers and to distributors in markets, and it's really now our moment, because it's the whole craft movement is going on in all markets all over the world, and sour ales are taking a much more important part in that. So we really position Rodenbach as the original sour. So the whole boom you are seeing now, for example, in U.S. craft is very recent. People are putting up oak fooders now everywhere, but we've been doing that for 200 years. So we really want to position ourselves as the original sour and bringing all that expertise, all that heritage to back today.
That's so great. Hey, we're going to come back in a few minutes. We'll talk about food and beer pairings on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
You made it yourself?
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're doing a special show in March 2015. Rudy from Rodenbach, a great Belgian Flemish red sour beer. We're talking about sour beers, and we're also talking about sour beer and food pairings. Sam Barbieri from Waterford Alehouse brought along a Port Royal. Sam, give us a little background on your... You told us about when you first started drinking Rodenbach and sour beers, but you also... have a special thing with head cheese and Rodenbach.
Yes, but when we started doing Big Island, I said I'm going to do a head cheese because these beautiful heritage pigs that we were getting were fantastic. The fat tasted beautiful, and I've always been into charcuterie, so I said let's do a head cheese along with roasting the whole pig and doing sandwiches as well. So. It turned out
but Sam,
to be
Sam
a phenomenon, but I was thinking that you know, the food pairing and the beer pairing was great. I always used to drink like a Riesling or a Sauvignon Blanc with salami, and then I started tasting and getting into these sour beers with some home brewers. I said, "This is the tremendous pairing. This is perfect."
And then also you would greet us at the barbecue festivals with...
We would... I would be one of the first ones there
breakfast.
As you were. And our breakfast was a Rodenbach and head cheese on black bread with a little mustard.
Mm. That's great.
This is perfect.
So what are some other, I mean, a few weeks ago we had Julia Hertz from the Brewers Association on talking about food and beer pairings, and she suggested for Flemish Reds a lentil soup. Are there any typical food pairings that you guys have with the Rodenbach?
Oh, there are a lot of food pairings. One of the most well-known food pairings that we know in Flanders is that the classical Rodenbach with shrimps, also with seafood and with fish, goes very, very well together, much more better than even another type of wine. But I like to hear that Sam said Riesling. I try to pair Riesling with head cake and of head cheese. And Riesling has quite the most sour taste in white wine, and this goes the best with some fatty food and
Excellent with a head cheese, a rillette, any other, like even a liverwurst, if that's all you can find in your store.
This is a big hunk of rillette with big pieces of bread, so everybody's chomping. But Sam, how did you make this pork rillette?
This is a Berkshire pork shoulder that I just stewed down with a little bit of... I just used some pork stock and water, herbs de Provence, some bay leaf and extra sage, and a touch of garlic. Very simple.
Delicious.
Cook it down, and by cooking it maybe 6 hours or so, stewing it, when it falls apart, I take it out of the juice and hand shred it. Two forks. I just pull it apart. Mm-hmm. And shred it, form it again, and pour some of the fat back on top.
It's almost like a meatloaf. A little bit.
Could be.
But better.
Well, it's perfect. We're drinking Grand Cru, which is 6% alcohol, Flemish red brown. It's 75% or 3/4 of mature beer, so beer that's aged for 2 years. It's got a real delicious flavor to it, but it also has a high acidity level, and that acidity pairs so well with a, you know, either the fatty cheeses or any cheese, or, you know, a rich meat dish like this. So it's a perfect combination. It really brings, I think, the flavors complement each other so well.
And additionally, what the acidity will do is, like, with every sip, it will clean your palate.
So it's very palate cleansing.
Yeah, you can get the full pure flavor of that rillette every time again. So that's ideal for that kind of
food.
That's
great. So you're here on a tour of America. Mm-hmm. And you're going to tell us the cities you're going to, and are you doing any particular Rodenbach and food pairings or Rodenbach beer dinners along the way?
We are. Rudy has been in San Francisco, and we were at Tornado there. Went to Rare Barrel, had a beer dinner at 415. We spent a few days in in Chicago, hit Hop Leaf there. Had a beer sampling with sausage at Bangers and Lace. Mm-hmm. So great dinners there.
And also Cheval.
Oh, Cheval was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the food there was spectacular. And paired with Rodenbach well, because they use a lot of foie gras and kind of, they make their own meats and bolognese and stuff. Yeah. So fantastic.
So that's what people were doing, kind of hitting traditional pairings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It seems almost like the artisanal, traditional way of cooking, because this is an artisanal, traditional beer, just so naturally marries together with those wonderful foods that people like Sam are making.
Sam, if you were doing something new, let's say you were teaching some students culinary class, and you wanted to go beyond these classics like head cheeses and rillettes, what are some new foods or Asian foods or something that you're seeing that would go well with the Rodenbach?
I would go towards salads, especially getting into this time of year. We would look to make a salad, maybe of grilled duck breast with some goat cheese, walnuts, a cured pork belly grilled as a garnish. But it would go well as a salad, too. I could even incorporate this beer into the dressing, as a vinaigrette.
That's great.
Instead of a straight vinegar.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
So you guys have some great food and beer traditions in Belgium. What, like in the summertime when the young people are out with their Rodenbach and cans at a picnic or a festival, what kind of food are they eating now in Belgium?
Maybe even fast food. It goes very well together with fast food, because fast food is also salty and fatty, and it cleans your palate. So
and as of next week, when coming not this Sunday but coming Sunday, when Easter starts, then traditionally the ghost season in Belgium starts, and then people will that's like a national or regional Flemish tradition. It's like a spoonful of grey North Sea shrimp. You get it like with a spoon, and you sit on the terrace watching the North Sea, eat some salty small shrimp.
What do you call the shrimp is your language Flemish?
Yes, garnalen. So it's a garnal, and that is a traditional Flemish dish, small North Sea shrimp, a spoonful, and then with a Rodenbach, perfect marriage.
How has it changed? I mean, how long have you been the brewer at Rodenbach?
I'm now responsible for the production since 21 years, but I worked there since 82, so now 33 years. And I've learned a lot of things from the old brewmasters, Jacques Lambert, and he learned it from his father, Léon Lambert. So we go back in time till 1924. So that's quite a big tradition.
How did you get your training? Did you start working in a brewery, or did you go to a school?
I go to school, naturally. But I had my training for Rodenbach at the brewery from Jacques Lambert, and after him from others.
And are there secrets? I mean, I know in America they say a lot of the craft brewers, they all share their secrets and their new things. Do you feel like that you have a house secret or things you don't want to share with someone?
The house secrets or the vats. We do a positive selection in our culture that we have in the vats since more than 200 years. And that's the secret, but you cannot imitate it. You cannot... duplicated it, because it's so original from the brewery. And David.
Yeah, the as you were explaining to me, also you have
fantastic.
if you're a great brewer and you brew an IPA, you can go through 6 or 8 cycles, and in a half a year you can have a great IPA. Where it takes decades, literally, to get these big oak foeders to have the microflora and the to perform and have the balance. So how can you duplicate a yeast strain that's been active for 200 years? Some of our oak barrels are 150 years old, and they were made with 150-year-old French oak trees. There's the local hops, the mineral-rich water.
But even more important, because we have such a big fats, we have to wait 2 years to become a result. So when we speak about 200 years, that will say only 100 cycles. So you understand that will say it takes its time to make it even more better. And everyone wants to have the culture that we have in our vats, but it's so typical. You cannot inoculate it in another type of vat, because the dimensions of our vats are very, very important. And you cannot imitate that in a small wine barrel, used wine barrel. That is something else.
How big are your vats?
Our vats, let me say, that the smallest are have a capacity of 18,000 liters. That's 180 hectoliters, that will say around 90 wine barrels, but the biggest have a capacity around 65,000 liters, that will say 650 hectoliters.
So the smallest, how many people could stand in these vats?
Oh,
if you had to, Guinness Book of World Records.
I think we can stand in with 30 persons, and the biggest ones even with more. But the capacity of a big vat of 650 hectoliters is an equivalent around more than 320 wine barrels in one vat. That's amazing.
The owner of the brewery, the Palm Brewery is by definition a craft brewer by U.S. standards. The owner of the brewery, Jan Toyer, got into Rodenbach because he felt it was a cultural, icon and needed to be preserved. But he has a funny story about the oak foeders. He says, we have a routine maintenance. Every 50 years, a fooder has to be broken down, and the reeds have to be done. And so they actually have two coopers, full-time coopers on staff at the brewery.
And how do you break in the new fooders? I mean, do you make new ones?
No, we restore the old ones, and we do it stave by stave. You cannot do it in another way, because the length of a one stave is around five meters and a half. So you do it.
A stave is the plank. But explain the positive selection again, and how you take microflora from one from one barrel to the next one.
When we build up a new fooder or we restart the fooder,
that's
incredible. Big. It's incredible. then we look for the best maturing vat we have, and then we take a sample of that vat, around 15-20 hectoliters. We pump it in the restarting vat, and we go on. So and it took 2 years before we have the result, but every time we do it, when we have to restart the vat, we do it with the best vat we have.
Wow, that's amazing. A lot of work. On another note, so like some of the other Belgian styles, sour beers that I know, there's lambics.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between a lambic and a Flemish red?
A lambic has to be inoculated on a cool ship. So you make your wort in your brew house, you pump your wort on your cool ship, and there it will be inoculated or infected by microorganisms from the air. And then you go with the infected wort on wooden vats, and there you will have the fermentation in the first step, and then the maturation, but that took 2-3 years to become a good lambic. And what is geuze? Geuze is a blend between young lambic from the current winter, with lambic of 1 year and lambic of 2 years. When you blend that together, you bring it in a bottle, then the Brettanomyces wild yeast who are in the old beer of 1 and 2 years will ferment the unfermentable sugars or the sugars that were not fermented during the first year. And that brings you to geuze. Flemish red brown ales is an evolution on that. Because you can only make good lambic during wintertime when the temperature during night is low enough to don't have a wort infection. And therefore, they looked for the best yeast culture from spontaneous fermented beer during wintertime, and they recover it. And that's such a beer strain, in fact, such a yeast strain, we work with that at the brewery, because in the past we also made our own geuze. We had geuze St. George and Rodenbach, all made at the same brewery. But we go further with the Rodenbach, and we stopped the geuze production in early 70s.
And there's also some Belgian sours that are like more like sweet and sour as well. Are those still considered Flemish reds? So I feel like the Rodenbach is really well balanced.
Yeah, okay, but you need enough sourness. There are also old browns, old brown ales, Flemish old brown, will say that such a beer is not matured on wood, and that has no natural sourness in it. So when you don't have oxygen, you cannot have the real maturation on wood, just like in wine. You cannot make the same wine in a stainless steel tank comparing with the maturation on wood.
Let's say this is a great conversation, and what I love is coming from the old world, you know, having a real experienced brewer with a couple hundred year tradition, and it's such a great change of pace for us. So many new brewers in the States that we love who are just learning how to make beer. So we're going to keep talking about Rodenbach, and then these guys are going to eat some of Sam's pork roulettes, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special session at Jimmy's Number 43 with Rudy from Rodenbach, and we're talking about Flemish Reds. And Sam Barbieri is here. Rudy's got a great accent, which we appreciate on the radio. It's kind of like BBC from Belgium today. But he was talking about cool ships, and Sam said that he thought he said cruise ships. And it wasn't that far-fetched what Sam said. Oh, you thought that you took the vats and put them on ships. And so what is a cool ship? Who wants to tell us about a cool ship?
A cool ship is It's a big open tank at the top of but with a very low high at the top of the brewery, and you pump it. You pump your cooking wort to the top of your brewery in the open It's like an open fermenter, but it's an open back, or what do you say, an open...
An open vessel,
yeah.
But, so you're getting wild yeasts from the fields that are coming in.
And
open the windows and let everything flow in.
Yeah. It works like that. And you cool down your wort during the night from 100 degrees back to 20 degrees, and during the cooling of your wort in a natural way, the wort will be infected by organisms from the air. That's spontaneous fermentation.
That's indigenous to Flanders.
Mm-hmm.
Had you ever heard of a cool ship before, Sam?
Now that I know that it is, because I've seen videos of it, and I believe that's how Cantillon does it as well.
But the Lambic Valley is just south of Brussels.
Yes.
So the Lambic and the specific yeast strains in the air there, the Zen River Valley, mm-hmm. just exactly. south of
southwest of Brussels. Yeah. Brussels.
Yeah. Myself, I was watching old videos of Michael Jackson's, who used to do a show on NPR.
Yeah, Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
What's funny about cool ships, like, we've heard of him from Cantillon, you know, one of those great...
Yes. Right?
Lambic breweries, and a couple in America, we know Allagash and at Peekskill, those brewers have their own versions of the cool ship. So I've seen one, mm-hmm. but I still don't quite understand how it works. And that's when you talk about making beer as like witchcraft, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you have to have like unique atmospheric conditions?
That's right.
To propagate that yeast.
You could do that here as well. But what is specific at the Brettanomyces in the Zenne Valley is that we have the variety Lambicus and Bruxellensis, which are typical for mm-hmm. that, and they don't live anywhere, so they are concentrated right there.
So how do the American brewers start a cool ship?
Okay, I think it's very important to have an atmosphere around the brewery, and then you will have also a typical culture around that brewery. And the wild yeasts are in the building of the brewery.
Mm-hmm.
But what Americans also are doing, and I have seen it in the rare barrel, they bring in wort, and they infect the wort with yeast cultures of Brettanomyces, different types of yeast cultures, and also Lactobacillus cultures. So when you bring it in, once you have that fermentation, maturation at the brewery, then you will also have the typical culture at that brewery, and then you can do it also in an open cool ship. But first of all, you have to bring it in. But bringing in wild yeast, Brettanomyces yeast, and different strains, you may do it with different strains, that is not the same as doing it in Belgium in a historical brewery where you have that culture, because we have much more yeast, different yeast, wild yeast strains, comparing with the inoculating with some typical, maybe important and very good strains. Also, those who have some off flavors make it much more complex.
Well, this is a great introduction. Actually, when this show airs in a week or two on Saturday, April 18th, Jimmy's Number 43 will be hosting its annual April Sours event. So I know we're going to have a lot of different Belgian and American and Italian and German sour beers here for an afternoon. You can check that out at jimmysnumber43.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm learning a lot today from you guys. I mean, Sam, again, you've been a fan of Rodenbach for so many years.
Yeah.
What's the one that we just drank?
We're the Grand Cru.
That's the Grand Cru, yes. It's more expressive, much more apple and caramelized tastes. Also a note of raspberry, but there is no fruit in it. A note of sour cherries, but there are no cherries in it. So we become the typical fruity flavor by aging the beer on our wooden vats.
And Sam, I know that sometimes you have Rodenbach on draft.
Yes, as we speak, it's on draft right now.
At Waterfront House. What style is on draft?
It's a Grand Cru.
The Grand Cru is the draft.
Which is what we drank, and it is very complex. I would pair it with a nice pork dish, a goat cheese salad, grilled vegetables.
Yeah. You know, getting ready for lunch.
Rudy is described.
Bacon sandwich, BLT.
Yeah, there you go. Rudy's described Rodenbach, and particularly the Grand Cru, as the missing link between beer and wine. So it starts as a beer. It starts as an ale, and it's fermented as an ale, and then it's aged for up to 2 years in these big oak foeders. And the missing link between beer and wine comes in that you get a mature flavor taste and sophisticated taste profile of a red wine, and yet you have the refreshment of a beer. So you have the carbonation, you have the cool, you have the lower alcohol. So it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people who are red wine drinkers, if you expose them to Grand Cru, they really appreciate that.
Let's jump to the vintage, because there's not too many beers. I mean, there are some beers of the vintage. I mean, Sam's Brown and Barley Wines. But you have a vintage program with the Rodenbach.
That's right.
And I don't quite understand that. I'd like to know more about it.
Okay. Then I have to explain you what has happened in history. Long time ago, when we make Grand Cru, that was beer from a vat that has 18 months matured on wood. And every time again, it was another vat. And we there were some people, some customers who made remarks that the Grand Cru was never the same. So there was always an evolution because it was only one vat, unblended. And then we have said, okay, because people ask more and more Grand Cru, then we have made an optimum blend, and that was two-thirds of beer of 2 years old instead of 18 months, blended by a third of young beer. And we realized nearly always the same taste for Grand Cru. But then we missed an unblended beer. And then we said, okay, then we have to make an unblended beer, and we call it vintage, and we only make it once a year. So every vintage has another taste. And because it is a seasonal, people accepted that. And I think we have an optimum match. Now we have a Grand Cru who is very stable in the flavor and in the taste, and we have a new beer, vintage.
And as you've been traveling around the States, how are you presenting your beers at these places like Hop Leaf and Tornado?
Mm-hmm.
Are you presenting as you are today with the representative of each? Are you doing vintage tastings?
Oh, we present normally in the different special places our Fooder beer, who is the basic of all the beers we presented here. And what is Fooder beer? That is beer that is matured 2 years on wood. To explain people what a technical and aged beer is, and that it's very sharp, very crispy, and very tasty. And then you can blend it, and then you can understand what you taste in a classical Rodenbach. You also can taste what you have in a Grand Cru, and also what vintage is. The Rodenbach vintage is 100% unblended mature beer during 2 years on wood, but it's a special brew, and it has 7% alcohol or 7 ABV, so that makes the beer more full body and more tasty also.
It's amazing how different. This is the 2012 vintage.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
How this vintage tastes from the Grand Cru. I mean, you think they're so similar, but they're not.
It's single cask, so it's a whole different beer in itself. Whereas Grand Cru is blended. So, for example, in Chicago, we did a vertical tasting of vintage 2010, 11, and 12, to see how the evolution is going and compare them to each other. They're three completely different beers, completely different. So it's very interesting to do that.
Yeah, and you were asking what has happened at different places. Some Grand Cru is the go-to. It is the standard sour, and it's day in, day out, a perfect beer, and it's delicious. And that's because Rudy has 294 of these big foeders to select the beer from and get it perfect every time. Yet, as Bart was just saying, you have the vintages, which is one foeder. And it's so interesting how these foeders all have their own personality and create this own taste profile. Probably no different sometimes in a kitchen, a different pot or pan, affects, how you cook something. So again, some places we've done samplings with foods and we have all the different beers. Other times we've done just one beer. It really kind of depends on the environment and the place.
Sam, how do you think the vintage tastes differently than the Grand Cru?
I find it a little bit more sophisticated, complex, a little fruitier, a nicer, longer finish. This is more, as I would call this, like a first growth Bordeaux compared to, a Beaujolais.
I think the vintage, it actually tastes more sour to me.
Yes, it does, but it has a little bit more fruit in the back, too.
Yeah.
A little less carbonation, maybe?
No, the carbonation is the same, but we tried this product, this beer, together with baked duck liver, and that was amazing. Yeah. Amazing. With a little bit of honey, and that was heaven. That was heaven, and that was at La Folie in San Francisco, and also the chef cook, he was incredibly surprised. What a big food pairing that was.
Well, these beers are crying out for food, for sure.
Yeah,
I can't wait to have some of your pork really at Sam. All right, so one more question. So you guys are traveling the country. Do you think that someone in America could make a beer like this?
Oh, quite a good question.
Not in the first 200 years, no.
That's what you were supposed to say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, obviously, there's great brewers, and I think the Belgians, no different than I think early craft brewers were inspired by Belgian brewing. In return, I think Belgians are very positively looking to the U.S. and saying, wow, there's some great creativity and some interesting things going on. And as I said before, a great brewer can work towards this, but it will take decades for their brewery to mature, like Bart said, to have not only oak barrels or fooders that are performing well, but enough of them so that they can blend and balance and time after time have great beer. So no doubt it will happen, but it will take time.
Yeah, no, but David, I want to put that in perspective, because that's what we've been doing for 200 years. Don't get me wrong. I think that the evolution and the positive evolution of where American craft, the level of quality where American craft is today is amazing. I mean, and it's not only the dynamic that we are feeling in Europe, in Belgium. We are being challenged by the world because of the standard that American brewers are setting in terms of innovation and creativity and new product development. We have to follow because of that dynamic coming from here. And I'm sure that sour beer brewing is going to take the same high evolution as we've seen it with hoppier beer. So absolutely,
I think it's kind of like sports.
Absolutely.
Think about it. If the Chinese decided to start playing baseball, would they be great at baseball tomorrow? No. But in time, if they put a lot of time into it, obviously they're going to get there. So, you know, it's no different than any craft, whether it's cooking or...
tell you're part of an importer. You're talking world domination.
Yeah.
For us, okay, and we're in New York City. When this airs, this will have happened. But you're in New York City this week. What are a few bars and restaurants that you'll be doing things with Rodenbach in this week?
So we were in BXL. Last night, which is a traditional Belgium bistro, and we were doing a
Midtown, right?
We were at the 20 Zoot, the southern location. We were doing a traditional food pairing. We were at Top Hop down in Soho, doing a vertical. So we had a few different beers, Rodenbach beers. They were sampling. We were at Whole Foods on Houston. At Belgian Beer Cafe tonight, we're doing a fooder beer. So as Rudy said, we only brought six of these fooder kegs into the U.S., and we'll be sampling one of those tonight, but also doing food stations up on the mezzanine for people to sample the different foods together, and then we're doing a tour around to different bars like yours and Sam's.
Great, man. Well, that's cool. You know, because a lot of people, our listeners, want to know what's going on in New York City and where to get things. And are there a lot of accounts in New York City with Rodenbach on draft?
Yeah, I think increasingly so. What we're finding, just everybody's experience when you go into bars, there's a lot of rotation. So I think what we're seeing is Rodenbach Grand Cru is in the rotation now. And what we're seeing is more often than not, it's sticking or it's being repeated more quicker in the rotation because people are appreciating how good it is.
And you are in the market every day, and you see the market every day. But I'm only coming back every so many months. the evolution, the speed with which people, the acceptance for sour beers in general and Rodenbach specifically, is growing immensely. So it's really moving. It's really becoming a movement. So a lot of people are open to discover sour beers and Rodenbach in particular. So that's a really
good thing. Around the world, what are some of the other cities that you export the Rodenbach to?
Australia is very comparable to the US in terms of universe as a craft market and a good craft beer market. So we sell a lot of Rodenbach there. China is really shaping up for this kind of, and of course their palate is very fairly, very sophisticated as well. Our Hong Kong importer is creating his own dishes, like instead of a sweet and sour pork, he's doing like a Grand Cru in to deglaze the wok. It's fantastic the things they're doing. Russia is a very good sour beer market becoming, at least. Brazil, we see a lot of interest in these beers, so it's a global thing.
Which is, why don't you guys just quickly say your full names and your position, because I didn't get them.
Sure, I'm David Van Wees. I have Lattice Imports. We're a very small import company, and we import the Palm Brewery's beers from Belgium.
Great.
I'm Rudy Hekire, the brewmaster of Brewery Rodenbach since quite a long time, and I'm working there since 1882. No, 1900.
You are from 1880. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Cheers.
And I am Bart Brits, and I'm the export director for Palm Breweries, and I also export proudly export Rodenbach. All
are you
the
Belgian?
I am Belgian. Yeah.
And then this guy over here.
Yeah, Sam Barbieri, Waterfront Ale House.
Well, thanks for bringing the porkeriettes. Are they ever on the menu at Waterfront?
Yes, they are.
And in April, will you have Rodenbach Grand Cru on draft sometime?
Yes, and we have Rodenbach bottles as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Rudy, Sam, Bart, and David for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show. It will be airing in April 2015, right before our April Sours event, April 18th at Jimmy's Number 43. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.